This is all about health and wellness, and we are called Fit as a Fiddle Plus because it's more about just being physically fit. So today, I have Rita Brewer with me. She is my co-host, and I'm going to let her share a little bit about what she does in a moment, and then I'm going to introduce you to Kate, and Kate is going to talk about what her superpower is. But first, I just want all of the audience to know that I have the Kathy Benner International Academy. And one of the things that I do in the academy, of course, is the health and wellness lane, if you will. And because I am a firm believer that health comes before wealth. So even though a lot of the things that I do, as you can see here in my little Hollywood square, it says passive income mentor, I actually focus more on my health at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day. And then I sandwich my mentoring and my passive income in between that. Because again, health is everything. I mean, you can work and work and work all your life and save up all kinds of money, and then you turn around and spend all the money to try to buy your health back. And so, what is the point in that? So, anyway, with that said, I retired early. So, passive income was a piece of that, but I retired early so that I could work on my health. I was in the beauty salon industry for over 25 years, and the doctor was talking all about neck surgery and shoulder surgery and elbow surgery and wrist surgery. And finally, he said, "Wouldn't it be a novel idea?" He said, "If you quit right before I cut you all up instead of right after." He said, "Because either way, you're going to quit." And I said, "You know what? That makes sense to me. I think I'll quit before." So I did. And I've not had to have any of the surgeries. So the body is a wonderful thing. Rita and I talk about this often. The body will heal itself if you just put it in the right environment. And so that is what I'm attempting to do on a daily basis. And so now I'm at the place in my life and in my world where I want my environment to also be in that perfect space as well. So that's why we have Kate with us today. We're going to talk about that. But before then, Rita, tell the folks what it is that you do.
Thanks, Kathy. And I just want to say that's so awesome that your surgeon actually said that. But I can, because I
Yes.
work with a lot of surgeons, and I don't know too many of them that would recommend a major, career change before engaging in bringing you to the operating room. So that was great that you had a good surgeon like that. But I'm Rita Brewer. I've been a clinically practicing physician associate for over 33 years in many specialties of medicine and surgery, and got tired of seeing the obesity epidemic and diabetes epidemic continue to climb when I realized that type 2 diabetes is actually a preventable and in most cases reversible condition. So I've moved away from clinical practice. I still do it a little bit. I practice lifestyle, obesity medicine, functional medicine, but being a diabetes reversal coach, because I can really help people get to the root cause of the problem and help them to get off of as many medications as possible, and get their blood sugar levels back down to normal. And that just makes their life a whole lot better because diabetes affects every organ system of the body. And there at least 34 million people around the United States have it, type 2 diabetes, and they don't have to. So that's my mission and passion, is to help as many people reverse their diabetes as possible.
And you know what, Rita, you would think, one would think, with all of the information out there, at the tap of a keyboard, we could all know this information. It's there, it's available. But so many folks don't have any idea how to move the needle in their own lives to get from their illnesses and whatever is going on with them over to a better place. So that's why your message is so important, and I'm glad you're here. And that's why Kate's message is so important as well. So I want to introduce you to Kate Troyer. And Kate, first, before we start with any questions, give us a little bit of your backstory. I got a little sneak peek when she first came on that she used to stage properties for real estate, because I've just recently done one, and so that came up in the conversation. But tell us a little bit about your backstory, Kate.
Yeah, I would love to. So I kind of believe that I've been intuitively somehow practicing feng shui since I was a very little girl. And when I found feng shui, or when rather I like to say it found me, it was like it gave me this language that I had had all my life, but I didn't know I was speaking, right? So when feng shui kind of fell into my lap, I never planned on being a feng shui practitioner or anything like that, which I think is how all of the best things happen. I was running a extremely successful home staging and design consulting business. I had been doing that for 3 or 4 years. It was going extremely well. There was really no reason for me to step away from it. And I had this, I had already kind of started to pivot in my personal life and kind of dig into some past stuff that I needed to heal. I was already getting into more spiritual practices. And during that time, while my business was thriving, I was just kind of feeling like, I feel like there's more, or there's something bigger I should be doing. Or there's, you know, I feel that I'm supposed to do something more impactful. And while I was on a little girls trip in St. Petersburg, Florida, we planned on having a kind of a little spiritual girls weekend. We were waking up early every morning and doing Dr. Joe Dispenza meditations. And, you know, we were doing all of these kind of fun little, trying all these different like modalities while we were there. And I came out of meditation one day and I was just sobbing. And I was like, I just feel so disconnected from not only something bigger than myself, but the thing that feels like me. And what was really funny was when I packed for this trip, I had found this feng shui manual that I had purchased online and printed out. Like I had it binded and everything years before, never looked at it. Like I binded it, like it must have been important to me, but I had never looked at it. I found it packing for this trip and I thought, I'll throw this in my bag, you know, whatever, maybe I'll finally read this. And I had kind of forgotten about it. And that later that afternoon, after I kind of had this little, you know, breakdown, I pulled it out of my bag and I was like, huh. And my girlfriends were like, maybe this is a sign. And I thought, oh, okay, whatever. Later on, I open it up and there was a little post-it note in it in my handwriting that said, teach this. And I was like, well, that's weird. Maybe I read a page and, you know, cause I was doing a lot of like real estate team meetings and things like that to promote my staging business. And I would often do like mini teaching classes with that. And I thought, well, maybe it's from that. Maybe I put this in here by mistake. I have no idea. And the whole weekend was so synchronistic that I kind of was like, okay, well, I'm going to just set that, you know, over here and see what happens. And then later on that day, we went to a metaphysical store. I'm looking at crystals and stuff like that. My girlfriend comes over to me and she's like, Kate, they have a whole section of books on feng shui. You gotta buy one. Like you have to, you know? And so I'm like, okay, fine. You know, I'll buy one, whatever. And I stood in front of this book section for probably 20 minutes because there were so many different kinds and I didn't know what I didn't know. And in true me kind of fashion, I just bought every book that they had and took them all back to the
That's food. Too funny.
I was like, I don't know.
And I it's loved so you. Funny
because a couple of those books I've never even opened. They didn't resonate with me at all. And I think I've given them away. But the first book that I read was The Western Guide to Feng Shui by Tara Catherine Collins. And within the first two chapters, I was literally hooked. And that's when I had felt like, wait a minute, I have been doing some form of this my entire life. And oh my God, I feel like I have this language. Like I felt so understood in a way that I never had before. And so I'm like, I need more from this Tara Catherine Collins woman. Like, where can I need to listen to stuff. And so I looked her up on YouTube. I found nothing. And the book was written in the 90s. And so I was like, well, you know, maybe she passed away. Like, you know, I don't know. So I Google her and I happen to find out that she has her own school, the Western School of Feng Shui, which is a form school type of feng shui practice, and it is more intuitive and built a little bit more for a Western society. And what was another synchronicity to layer on top of that was my girlfriends and I were talking about taking a trip to Sedona over my birthday that following September. And when I looked at the courses they provided, it started online. And then there was an 8-day kind of finisher to the program in Sedona the week of my birthday, later that
day. Nice.
And it was just so.
And you're like, this has to just happen. Yeah.
Literally within 2 days, I signed up for the courses. I decided to get rid of the staging portion of my business, which was the majority of my income. It was the majority of my clientele.
Wow.
I just felt so pulled to it. And I'm kind of that person when I get into something, I'm an all in kind of person. And I just wanted to immerse, like I wanted nothing more than to like keep going with my internal and spiritual practices and just open myself widely basically to feng shui. So I started studying and doing courses, and I read, I don't know, over that summer, probably 25, 30 books. I was listening to lectures. I was playing around in my own house. And that was really, it just kind of like overtook me when I found it. And my mission that has been built out of that was that when I was getting certified, I'm like, okay, why is this not more popular? Like, how do more people not understand mm-hmm. this or even know what the heck it is? And I realized that the way it's spoken about is often kind of esoteric or a little superstitious, or a lot of words are used that people are not used to hearing. And it's very normal for us as humans to like, when we hear stuff, we don't have a reference point to, we just kind of tune it out. We don't want to know more because we don't want to feel stupid or, you know, so on and so forth. And so I decided at that time, I was like, I'm going to be the person that makes this something that anyone could understand, whether they want to keep it at a foundational level, which to me, just the basic foundations will forever change how you live and co-create with your space, with your home. Or if you want to, you know, get super crazy like me and dive into it and get really, you know, have a more spiritual practice with it, I just feel like it's such an amazing resource and a support system that everyone has and everyone is using. They just haven't learned the language of how to interact and play with the energy in their space. So
with you saying that you wanted to be the person that can explain it so that everybody can understand it, for some of our audience, I'm sure they're like, I've heard of feng shui, but I'm one of those people, I don't really know exactly what it is. How can you give us an overview so that our listeners know what feng shui actually is?
Yeah. So depending on what you've heard about feng shui, I do want to start with saying that there are many different forms of feng shui. Right. So you could hear conflicting information depending on the country of origin, depending on the personal practitioner. So I like to explain feng shui like this. It's really just a practice that helps you understand that your home is your mirror. It's an extension of your internal energy. So anything that has gone on in your past, you're currently facing, you know, in your present, or you expect to happen in your future, shows up in your home. So just like we always hear, you know, thoughts create things and we create our own reality, it's basically just another take on that. And it's focused on your environment or your home space, right? Your home is a story and a reflection of you. And so at its base, that's literally what it's all about. And to me, just knowing and thinking about that alone completely changes the way that you look at your environment, right? Because you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, you mean I don't just hate this because I hate it, like it's a mm-hmm. reflection of me, or I don't just feel really good in here because my home's just naturally amazing, right? It's because of me. It's a reflection of me. I think that just makes such a difference in the way that we start to interact and think about our space.
Very interesting, because again, I not only I sold insurance over the years, I was in and out of people's homes, you know, in the real estate industry, I'm an investor, but I'm in and out of different houses, looking at different properties. And oftentimes, especially when as an investor, when I'm looking at properties, oftentimes there's already a tenant in place. And so we've gotten permission to go in and look at the unit because we're thinking about buying this fourplex or whatever, and maybe a couple of the units are already rented. And I'm just amazed at the different spaces that I go through. And I have a tendency to, when I get back out to my car, I'm like, how can people live like that? How? But they do.
Yeah.
And they really don't know. They don't know what they don't know. So my biggest question about feng shui, and I'll have to admit, I'm totally ignorant of the subject. I'd love to know more. I've looked through your website. I plan on learning more. But my biggest question is, what comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
Do we feel and think and process a certain way, and so then our environment mirrors that? Or if our environment is out of control, does that then change how we think and process? I mean, what comes first, us and our processing and thinking, or the space?
Wait, that's such an amazing question. I don't think it's like a necessarily what comes first. I kind of see it as this continuous cycle, and one can affect the other, and then we get in the motion, right? I will say that when you're moving into a new space, right? When you find a new space, you typically attract the frequency or the vibration that you are at, right? So if you're here, you're most likely going to find a home that is here, but you're probably not going to align with something that is up here in frequency, if that makes sense. And that's not good or bad, right? That's just an observation. And I think too, there's also this level of control of environment. And I'll use my personal story as an example here. So growing up, the reason that I'm so passionate about what I do and how I believe I've been developing this language of my own since I was a little girl is because I grew up in a really tumultuous family relationship. And the one thing that I basically had control over in my life was my bedroom. And my mom didn't care at all about our living space. It was very dirty. It was very chaotic. But I was allowed, I say allowed, I just kind of took matters into my own hands to clean, to rearrange stuff, you know, and she often didn't like when I did that when she was gone at work or whatever, but I still did it because it was like my outlet for creating some sort of stability and normality. Yeah. And it was like, okay, if my environment feels like the environment of my friend's house or what I've seen on TV, in my mind, I can pretend like I'm having a normal, safe childhood, even though I very much was not. So I think that what I like to say about this is I think as a kid, it's one thing, but when we are adults, we have to understand, and this is something that I have grown to understand as an adult and working through a lot of trauma and things like that from my childhood, is that we are actually the ones in control of our life and therefore our environment. And so as much as we may want to blame our environment for, you know, what's going on in our life, chances are is we created that environment and now the state of it is kind of keeping us stuck. And unfortunately, and this is easier for some than it is others, I actually think feng shui is an amazing practice to couple with therapy, any type of therapy, whether it's like healing that you're doing or talk therapy or whatever that is, because it helps you work within something physical. And I know that was, you know, something personal for me was that because of the way I grew up, I was not very grounded within my body. And it was funny that my feng shui practice was kind of like the gateway for me to get more in touch with being in my body. Because I think for people, especially kids that go through trauma that can't control anything, and we often find ourselves escaping and kind of, you know, living up here, we're really good at disassociating. So it's hard to tap into what's going on inside, because anytime something remotely bad happens, we just disassociate, right? And so when we're able to see that our environment reflects our internal energy, and we can see that outside of ourselves and start to play around with that environment in physicality, it's like it creates this connection with the external and the internal. And it's really a powerful practice for someone who has those types of tendencies, because you're able to see something outside of yourself. And so, you know, that disassociation starts to kind of be like picked away at. So I know it was kind of a little bit of a flow from your question, but I think it's really important, because we often think, you know, feng shui is just about the placement of our art and our furniture, and it very much is, don't get me wrong, but I think there's this deeper level of practice that for certain people can be extremely, extremely beneficial.
Well, you mentioned, you know, your energy. So, and you said, you know, like if you're here and you're looking for a new environment, you know, you end up like in here picking, how can you actually raise your energy, and can you raise that through feng shui?
Oh, I definitely think so. So, something that I relate very much to what you said when you started was kind of bookending your day with taking care of you, right? So to me, having that morning routine and that nighttime routine that is all about what I need to feel really good, and that's going to be different for everyone. I think to me, that's a really great starting point for anyone that wants to, you know, raise their energy and be in a better place. Unfortunately, in our society, we're taught that doing things for ourselves is selfish and we shouldn't do it. We should just devote everything to others. But, you know, it's really hard to pour into others when we're completely empty. And so especially if you're working from a space of, you know, your whole life, other people have emptied and you've, you know, have emptied you, it takes time to really fill up your own cup. And what I found from my own personal practices and then working with clients is that you really have to start with you. And so I would recommend to anyone, you know, a bookending is really great, that morning and night routine. But if that feels too overwhelming, pick one or the other. I would recommend morning because it's starting you off on a really strong foot. And again, that can be, you know, for me, my typical morning routine, I spend a good 4 hours with myself, sometimes five, before I really get into my day of being with others. And that's something that like just feels really good for me. That might feel really overwhelming to someone else, right? So I think starting with something, I can't stress learning some form of breath work or meditation enough. I think it's really important to start your day just, you know, getting into your own body. Maybe that's yoga, maybe that's journaling, maybe that's sitting with your cup of coffee in silence 10 minutes before your kids get up. You know, and I think too, like knowing that you're going to have to change your lifestyle a little bit to promote a better energy. Like, you know, a lot of people, well, I can, or I want more sleep. Well, you might have to get a half an hour less sleep at first to start pouring in and giving back to yourself. So I think giving back to yourself is the first thing. And so to me, when you're talking about creating a routine for yourself, especially a morning routine, chances are you are going to be doing some, if not all of that routine within your home. So for example, if you want to get up and meditate, or you want to get up and journal and whatever, it's extremely important to have a space to do that within your home that makes it really easy for you, right? So if you have to set up a space, or your home feels chaotic or whatever, you're going to be less likely to do the thing because you're not prepared for it. So, you know, going on with the meditation example, let's say I want to meditate. As soon as I wake up every morning, I want to roll out of bed and I want to go to my comfy place. I would say you need to set up your meditation area. What are some things that you like to have for meditation? And if you're new, maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's just your headphones, right? And a candle to light, because, you know, it's dark out when you wake up, and that gives you a nice ambiance or whatever. But maybe it's just your headphones. Okay, so where would you like to meditate? Where's a space in your home that feels good to you? It could be a very small little corner. It could be on the floor in a corner in a random room. You know, it doesn't have to be this entire space. It could be, but I think finding that, hey, where do I feel the best? And if there's nowhere, okay, I need to create a little corner that feels good to me. You know, throw a candle there, throw some pillows on the floor, like whatever it is. And you don't have to go out and buy things. Use what you have in your home. Oftentimes it's just decluttering and cleaning up that space and adding a couple little things that bring us joy is enough. And then stick to doing that for a few weeks. Make yourself do it. And I think you'll find that, you know, as your personal energy evolves, you're going to want to evolve that space as well. Right? Ooh, maybe I want to add this to my meditation. You know what? I was cold in the morning. I want to make sure I have a blanket there. When I come out of meditation, I have all these thoughts in my head that I'd like to write down. I'm going to make sure that my journal is in my meditation space, so I never have to get up once I'm done. And a meditation space is simple, right? It's a simple example, at least for me to kind of play off of. But I think when you want to, you decide to help yourself, you then look at your environment to support you in making that decision. Our homes are, you know, it's a fact that everything is energy, right? Like that is a scientific fact. So our homes are energy. And to me, that means our homes, even though they are inanimate objects, they are alive in a way. And the purpose of their structure is to give us a foundation of safety and security. So they want to support us in living the best lifestyle that we can. So if we're able to help ourselves and then work with that energy and say, okay, this is how my home needs to support me in making these decisions that are going to raise my energy, it's going to, you know what I mean? Like that, again, we're bringing in that cycle.
Well, and I know I have some students that always have the questions where I teach a whole writer's group. And one of the things that comes up in the writer's group is that my family doesn't support what it is I'm trying to do. What happens if you have this family home and the rest of the family members do not want to support what it is that you're trying to do? Is there any tips or tricks to overcome that?
So I again think it's coming back to being a little selfish. And if the family doesn't want to support you, you have to support yourself. And I know that's not necessarily fun, and it's easy for us to blame others as to why we aren't progressing. Now, obviously, if you're in a really negative, abusive situation, I think we know the answer is to remove yourself. And again, speaking from experience, I know that isn't always easy and that does take time. So I'm not trying to belittle like those situations. But I think for the majority of people, it's really easy to be like, well, I need support from all these other people to do it. And the truth is, We don't. We need our own support. Like, we have to make the decision. So I'd say if you don't feel supported or you feel funny doing these things around your family, you may have to get up an hour earlier. You may need to create a space down in your basement or a little nook in your office or somewhere where you can shut the door to have this time with yourself. And I understand that that is not always easy. In my own personal journey, most recently with getting into feng shui over the last several years, I lost friendships. I lost a long-term relationship and clients and business relationships because they were like, what the hell are you doing? Like, we don't understand this. Why are you doing this? I don't believe in you. And that was extremely challenging and very difficult. But I pushed through that. And now I don't have any children. So I know that that's a slightly different topic when you have kids. But really, I think if you can't have this whole routine, what are some little things that you can do to pour into yourself, right? Maybe it's putting a little affirmation on a sticky note in your car, right? Because you're the one that sees that most often. Maybe it's whenever you have a few minutes in the day, you sit down and just breathe and quiet your breath. You know, when you have those little micro moments alone, you choose to take advantage of them. And again, raising your energy and your vibration and choosing to be different is not necessarily easy. It's simple. It's simple in the practice that you can do, but it's not, it can be challenging, especially when the people around you are not really into it. So I don't know if like I have a foolproof answer for that. I think everyone's situation is different, but I think it starts with consciously choosing yourself and then saying, okay, how can I consciously choose myself in these small moments throughout the day? And that will just keep building.
So let's say that I have someone that's brand new to feng shui. They do have control over their environment at home. They're the ones that get to do the decorating, that get to do whatever, however they want to place the furniture. Where should they start?
Okay, I'm going to give you two places.
Okay.
The first one is going to be your front door. So in feng shui, your front door is seen as your mouth of chi, or where energy comes into your home. So it's where energy not only finds, but it enters your space. So your front door is extremely important, if not the most important place to play around with and be mindful of when it comes to feng shui, because that's where our new energy, opportunities, blessings, all of those things are entering our home and our life. So things you may want to be mindful of with your front door. What I will tell people to do is like go outside, walk up to your front door and pretend that you're a guest. You're at your home for the first time. How do you feel? And I think most feng shui, like, yes, there are all these tools and modalities and things that you can use. But to me, we all have intuition and we can all ask ourselves, how does this make me feel? Good, bad, indifferent. And then we can kind of, you know, go from there. So stand outside your door and say, okay, do I feel welcome here? Does this make me feel happy? Like, am I like, oh my God, pretty planter. Oh, I love this wreath. Oh, if it's dark, it's nice and bright. You know, there aren't burnt out light bulbs and cobwebs and bushes along the path that are, you know, jutting out at me that I have to move around.
Curb and appeal. So,
what's that?
The curb appeal.
Yeah, exactly. Curb appeal. It's extremely important because your front door is also seeing how you present yourself to the outside world, right? So I think that's a really good place to start. And it's the easiest place to start. Like, it's just your front door, right? It's what's leading up to your front door. And also ask yourself, you know, are you using your front door? So many of us, and myself included, we go in and out of the garage, right? Because that's where we park our car and we come in. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I'm not telling you to park in your garage and then get all the way out and walk to the front of your house. But you should be mindful of utilizing your front door, if not every day, several times a week, whether it's to get the mail or if there's no reason for you to open your front door, make a habit out of opening it in the morning and just, you know, being like, oh, thank you. Right. Thanks for the new energy that's entering my space, or I'm welcoming that in. It doesn't have to be woo woo. And like, you don't have to do a dance or light any incense or anything. You can just open it and allow that new energy or fresh air, if you want to think about it that way, to just enter your space. And then also when having guests over, start prompting them to use the front door. Hey, park here, come to the front door. Right? Just, you know, because our home likes that. That's its entrance. It's where it can welcome people. And it likes that energy of welcoming others. So that's a really good, simple place to start. My second place I would say is your bedroom. So your bedroom is going to be the most intimate reflection of you. It's holding your deepest desires, feelings, you know, the things that you don't share with just everyone, like that really deep part of yourself. So I think experimenting with your bedroom and how it feels is extremely important. And when I'm working with clients or teaching workshops, and I actually have this really amazing workbook that's coming out in the next month or two, all about this method and working through it in different areas of your home, where I'll just tell people, okay, sit in your room. So we'll say your bedroom, and close your eyes, take a few deep breaths, and then just say, okay, how do I feel in here? And then make note of how you currently feel, and then ask yourself, okay, how do I want to feel in here? And if you're not good at decorating and, you know, you're not inclined in that way, you know, you're not very visual, take those words of how you want a space to feel and get on Pinterest. Romantic feeling bedroom, joyful feeling bedroom, calm bedroom, you know, whatever that is. And see if there's anything that you like, and then start playing around with those types of things. And I could go into all the things you could do in your bedroom as kind of like staple things if you want. But I think just simply asking yourself, how do I feel in here and how I would like to feel? And then using your intuition to guide you through creating that space is really powerful. And I found that it gives people permission to think about how they want to feel in a room instead of, well, I saw this on Instagram and this mm-hmm. is a popular look and these are popular colors and this is trendy. Like, none of that matters. If right. you build your space from feeling before design, you are going to be aesthetically pleased by that space, in my opinion.
I have a challenge with that, Catherine. Yeah. My bedroom is my absolute sanctuary, and I just love it so much. I have a hard time leaving.
Oh.
I don't want to leave my bedroom. It's so cozy and comfortable. It's such my happy place. It's sometimes hard to get motivated to leave.
Well, I have to say I love that, because that's how I typically feel about my bedroom as well. Like, I love going to bed in there. And when I wake yeah. up, I'll be like, oh, I just love it in here. And I love yeah. my blankets yeah. and everything like that. So, but if, let's just say that if you were like, well, I never want to leave, what do I do? Right. I would say, you know, pick another space in your home that you also want to feel that way about. That's maybe yeah. a little bit more active of a space, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's your living room or your,
yeah.
in your office or something like that. But that's not,
I was just teasing more, but I'm curious to know, what are some of the principles of feng shui? So I know there are certain ones, but I don't know what they are. So could you explain just briefly, like, how many there are and what are they?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So with basically every type of practice, there are three main foundational principles. And that's that everything is energy, everything is always changing, and everything is connected. So to me, that's even another way that we explain the universe, or religion explains God. Everything's energy, everything's connected, you know, everything is always changing. So those are really the three main principles foundationally of basic, you know, of most feng shui practices. And so I think what's really cool about that, though, is it says absolutely nothing about your home, right? So it's really, it's not just about your space, but it's about the energy within your lifestyle that we're then bringing into your environment. So those are the three kind of basic main principles. And then again, depending on practices, there are just kind of nuances within each. The front door being, again, something that is extremely important to all forms of feng shui. It may just be, excuse me, taken a little differently, where in some cultures and practices, you know, you want a south-facing front door, some you want an east. In my form school feng shui practice, we don't care about the direction. We just need to know where it is, and then that's how we will adjust the, it's called a Bagua map. I call it a home energy map. So think about it. I like to think of it as like a chakra system that's in your home, or you could think about it like you have a personal birth chart with astrology. Your home kind of has its own energy chart. But that's kind of, you know, where some things will differ, but all across the board, the front door is extremely important. And I would say those are kind of like, I feel like there should be more. There's so many nuances and tools within feng shui. But I would say those are honestly kind of like the basic principles that you're going to find throughout, you know, the different forms of feng shui.
But isn't there like a money area, a romance area, like something
so,
like that?
So yes, and that's where the Bagua or the home energy map comes in. I wouldn't necessarily call that a principle. I would say that that's a tool that's used in feng shui. And some people resonate with that and some people don't. So that to me is where like the principle, the underlying principle is that your home is your mirror and an extension of your internal energy. And you can do a lot with that, right? At a basic principle level. But then if you want to go a level deeper, you can look at some of the tools that we use in feng shui, and the Bagua or home energy map is one of my personal favorites. This is a tool that you would lay on your home's floor plan. You would find the location of your front door on your floor plan or a top-down view of your home if you don't have that. And you're to start with, and we'll keep it simple, you want to look at the main level of your home. So if you have a 2-3-story home, a basement, start with the main, you know, where that front door is. Right? You're going to place that home energy map on your space, and that's where it's going to give you, there are actually 9 different areas. The center area is what I like to call your center of wellness. So it's your health, it's your physical, mental, and spiritual health, and it's you as a whole. And the other 8 areas that surround that whole you are 8 main aspects of your life. And again, each form of feng shui and different practitioners are going to have slightly different names and slightly different connections with these areas, but they kind of all originate from a similar place. So in my opinion, you have wisdom, and so your self-cultivation and knowledge. You have new beginnings, and that's also related to your ancestors and your family. It's kind of like growing out of the way you were raised and also just fresh starts in your life. You have abundance for your wealth and prosperity, but it's also abundance in all things in your life. You have fame and reputation, which is related to inspiration, how you are known as your most authentic self. And if you are your most authentic self, you're going to inspire others to live in that same way. You have love and relationships, which is obviously about your relationship with your significant other, within business, your friendship, but in my opinion, most importantly, the relationship you have with yourself first. And then you have inner child, which is often referred to as children or creativity, but it has to do with creation, things that you've created, and also kind of the way you look at life. Like, can you step back and look at things, you know, from an inner child point of view, where you have these kind of like idea of endless possibilities. And then synchronicities, which is also referred to as helpful people. So think synchronicities, think being in alignment, having the support of something or someone outside of yourself, right? That you maybe that just is kind of like comes out of the blue. And then finally, we have life path, which is heavily related to your career. But if you don't have a career, that's okay. It doesn't mean that you don't have a life path, but it's really about kind of the overall trajectory of your life and is very much related to your intuition. And I have this whole theory too on each one of those areas being related to our chakra system. So like if you're working within a certain area or you know that you need help in abundance, working internally with your root chakra is something that you can kind of do to get that internal and external kind of, you know, circle going.
Well, I have a question about one of your concepts called tap into your shui. How is that different from the traditional feng shui?
Yeah, so I think that's where, so this is a method that I developed through doing a ton of workshops. And it wasn't until in teaching at women's retreats that I didn't realize that, oh, I like created my own method of helping people. So when I was doing workshops and teaching at these retreats, I never knew who was going to come in and say, oh, I know all about feng shui, and who was going to be like, I've barely heard of this. Like, I have no idea what it is. So I created this method that I start every retreat and workshop with. And that is, I get everybody quiet. We take some deep breaths together. They close their eyes. And I kind of touched on this before. And we go through this visualization of tapping into the energy of their space. And that's where we're going into a room. I like to tell people that a good way to play with it at first is to go into a room that you don't like, because as humans, it's so much easier for us to be like, I don't like this, and I know I don't like these things, as opposed to what we already know feels good. And so going into a space and just getting quiet and saying, okay, how does this feel? And okay, so where might these feelings, where are they coming from? Is it an object? Is it the paint color? Is it a memory? Is it because there's clutter everywhere? Like, is it because I love this window? Like, what are some objects that stick out to us, good, bad, or indifferent? And then asking ourselves, you know, are there any solutions that are coming up that can help me better this space? And then, you know, making a plan to create that change, right? So that's what I like to, it's a very simple way to describe that. But that's kind of that method that I think literally, whether you're into feng shui, you want to be into it or not, that's a method that literally anybody can use to not only get more in touch with their personal energy, but also the energy of their space, and give themselves the permission to say, okay, well, how would I like this to feel? How would I like to feel? Right. So you can use this in a room, but to me, you could use this in any situation. Ooh, let me check in. How am I feeling? Let me tap into my own energy. How am I feeling right now? How would I like to feel? And how do I bridge the gap between what I'm currently feeling and where, you know, where I want to be? And so that's a big part of what the workbook that I'm creating right now is all about, is just teaching people to do that, giving them feng shui tools, and then and having them go through that process over and over and over again. And then it just kind of becomes second nature.
Give us an example of a student that you've had that you've worked with that by incorporating feng shui has made a huge impact and made a change in their lives. Is there anyone that stands out to you?
So there's so many, but there's one woman that after doing this longer, you know, visualization in a women's retreat, afterward, she literally came out of this visualization just sobbing. And, you know, we're all like, oh my, you know, do you want to share? Like, what's going on? Like, what do you need right now? And she's like, well, you asked me to go into my least favorite space. And it was the room that my daughter tried to commit suicide in, and I found her. Now, her daughter is okay. she found her. She's like, but it's become our catch-all room. It's been that way for 8 years. I hate going in there. It feels awful to me. And she's like, I have been in therapy for this thing for 7 years. And going into this space that I didn't want to go into, asking myself how I'm feeling, and just making that connection and making the choice to now create a space that I'm not just shoving things mm-hmm. that I don't want to deal with in, because that's often what clutter represents in our homes, is putting things in between us and something that we need to heal from or deal with or whatnot. She's like, I've made this connection and this has done more for me than 7 years of therapy. And that was one huge. And two, I've seen her go on in the last couple of years, because we've stayed in touch and, you know, we're friends on Facebook and everything, where her life wasn't bad before, but I've seen her come out of her shell and start to put herself in positions and do things that she's always wanted to do, like be in plays and just in drama and things like that, that like she had kind of done at some point in her life. But she's just kind of fully embraced and is really thriving, and also has a better relationship with her family and her husband after getting to kind of like the root cause of this problem. So not that I have anything against talk therapy, but I think sometimes we can talk a situation to death and we keep talking and talking and talking about this place that we don't want to be. And we're not getting to that root cause of like, what's making me feel like this? Yeah, and sometimes we need that uncomfortable moment of being like, oh my God, I'm in this space. And I never even thought about why. And now we've made that internal connection. Mm-hmm. And it really just sets us free from this thing that has been like a cloud over us and has been represented in our home for years. And it's just really powerful.
Yeah, I love that. That's great.
Wow, that's huge. That's mm-hmm. huge. What happens when you have a client that lives in a very tiny space? And of course, they see all of these HGTV shows where the spaces come out beautiful and decorated beautifully. But yet, for them to be practical, they have to have a lot more stuff than maybe what they even want to have in that space, because it's such a small space. And one of the things that I'm thinking about is I would love to have a flat in New York City, because I love New York. But I can't afford a flat in New York City, but I might someday be able to afford a little efficiency flat. So with an efficiency, you know, you get the little corner kitchenette, you get the little bathroom, and then you have one room to be your living room, dining room, bedroom. It's all in this little tiny flat. How do you incorporate feng shui into that kind of a space?
Well, I think you have to be willing to part with things that you don't actually need. And no one wants to hear that, but it's the truth. And, you know, we can't live in a space that's so jam-packed that we have no room for anything new to come in. Because again, that's symbolizing our ability to welcome new things into our life. And if we're so filled up, we might have all these wants and desires, right? But it's like, okay, they're right here, but like, you don't have any room for them. So they're just going to hang out here in the ether until you make some room, right? And so, you know, whenever you're dealing with a small space, and I talk with people about this so often, clients, and then also with my community on TikTok, this is something we talk about a lot. And what I find is people are just kind of like, well, I'm unwilling to get rid of anything, but my house is packed with stuff. And I'm like, do you need all of that stuff? Well, I mean, I don't need it, but I like it. Well, that's, again, it's kind of putting us in that lack mindset, right? Like, do you really need all of that stuff? So especially if the efficiency you were going to have was not a place you were going to live in year round, like, how much stuff do you actually need there, right? Like,
right.
What you want that flat for is the experience of being in New York City and being right there in all of the action. So I think it would be, you know, obviously you're being mindful about your furniture placement and things like that. But I think when it comes to a small space, you have to be really mindful of what you actually need. And if you don't need it, you need to be willing to part with it. And whether that's selling it or giving it to someone who would love it, or donating it, or even throwing it in the trash, right? Like, I don't like to throw things in the trash, but sometimes for some people, I'm like, if you're in that mood to purge, just like go with it, because that's when you're going to be the most likely to fully get rid of stuff. But I think that, you know, in our society, we're taught that like we need, and we need to have all the things all the time. And that's really not true. Like, yeah. I personally right now live in a studio apartment, and I love it. I recently moved in there. I went from a large home in Chagrin Falls, and my partner and I split, and then I went to a condo, and I loved my condo, but I was not experiencing the energy that I wanted to there. It reminded me too much of my old life. And I, when I moved out of there, I said, I'm taking a couple months to kind of travel a little bit and stay with friends and kind of whatever. And I sold everything that I owned, and I loved my stuff. I loved my stuff very much. Like, it was not easy to make that decision, but like after I did it, I was like, oh my God, I'm so free, you know? And I think the idea that like, the things that we need when we need them will always be there. Mm-hmm. And trusting that is, and again, that's such a shift in our mm-hmm. mindset. That's not something that comes overnight. It comes by practice. But I think just, yeah, being willing to like actually live with what you need and not, and kind of take yourself out of that mindset of overconsumption that we're just fed constantly. We need every gadget. We need every tool. Like, if you don't use something every few months, like, chances are you probably don't need it. There may be a handful of things, right? But I see it most often in kitchens. Like, we think we need every single gadget and all the things, and we use it once, and mm-hmm. we don't use it for 5 years, or we never use it again. And we've kind of gotten out of this, like, okay, well, my friend cooks all the time, and like, I'm going to ask her if I can borrow this when I need it, right? Or if I really, really, truly need it in 5 years, I'll go buy a new one, you know, right. That type of thing. Because
by then, mine would be in the basement on a shelf somewhere, and I wouldn't be able to find it anyway.
Exactly. You'd end up buying something or figuring out how to do it with what you have. Like, and I think that's something too. The less we have, the more creative we get to be. Yeah. And it brings out our natural creativity that we all have. And I think that's something that has been lost, you know, with our society, is like, we don't have to be creative because there's always a gadget. There's always a thing. When being creative with stuff often gives us, you know, some really cool things that, you know, maybe we can't afford a big piece of artwork, but we have a bunch of little tiny ones, and that gives us inspiration for a gallery wall, or, you know, just so on and so forth. Like, we don't have a soap dish. I don't know, I'm just thinking of random, or a jewelry dish, but we're at a little store, we're thrifting or something, and we find this really cute little thing. They're like, oh my God, this would be the perfect jewelry dish, right? And that creativity also allows us to curate a home that really represents different facets of us and is filled with things that bring us joy. So I think circling fully back around to that, being really mindful about the fact that everything in your home should serve a purpose, be useful, or be something that you're just absolutely in love with, really helps you to kind of just naturally pare those things down if you're willing to be honest with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good point. How do you see future home design kind of evolving, especially because there is growing awareness about being healthy and energy, and all of these things are coming to the surface. We're hearing more about it. We're reading more about it. We're seeing more about it. Do you think that's going to affect home design down the road?
Yeah, I think it's already started to affect it. I think we're going to see homes and communities that are designed around wellness first, whether that's using feng shui or not. I think just the idea of it being designed around the wellness of the people that live in the home or within the community, we're starting to see a little bit of that. I think that's going to keep evolving. And I also believe that, not that there isn't a place for interior designers, but I see more people taking these things on themselves because they want to create a space that feels good to them.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why I think for me, creating resources and tools and little sessions or workshops or speaking engagements to help people get more in touch with what's going on in here so that they can joyfully bring that into their environment. To me, and I see that in many different industries, not just design, where people are going to be like, well, I don't need someone to do it for me. I want to learn X, Y, and Z, and then I want to have my own implementation of it. Like, I want the education or the knowledge or the resource, and then I want to create it for myself, because again, that energetic component of something is so much more when we're doing it for ourselves or we're infused in that. Mm-hmm. So like, even when I hadn't done, added feng shui into my business yet, and I was still doing design consulting, which I still do, I make my clients pick out things that they like. Like, I'll listen to them. I'll listen to what they don't like. I'll give them ideas. I'll give them options for things. But I'm like, well, but what do you, because they're like, well, what do you think I should do? And I'm like, well, what do you want to use the space for? What colors feel good to you? What do you like? Like, I kind of force them, and I've always done this, to be like, well, I don't live here. So if you have this ugly lamp that I hate, that I look at and I'm like, oh my God, that's awful. But you're like, my grandmother had this in her home and I just love it. She gave it to me. I have all these good memories. You know, my kid thinks it's so ugly, but I really want to keep it. But if you tell, I've had so many people like, if you tell me you hate it, I'll get rid of it. And I'm like, this is your home, right? Like, you're telling me you love this piece. So now my job is to say, how do we bring this piece in and make it feel like it's part of the space, right? Mm-hmm. So that you get to enjoy it. So everybody's home and space is going to be different. So I think we're going to be seeing, and what I think my part in this is like spreading the word of like, let's look at how we're feeling and how we want to feel first, and then build the aesthetics on top of that. Right. And I think we're also going to see less like decorative and more decorating with things that are useful. Right. I think that's really important in places like the kitchen and the bathroom, and thinking about your home decor as kind of altar spaces or more intentional spaces, you know, where you're putting things that really matter to you. Or, you know, like, okay, in my kitchen, like, I don't need decor that I don't use. Again, that's like,
remember all the jars of all of like the different peppers and
yes. You didn't open them or eat them. They were
no. They were waxed shut. They were just for show. And right. I don't know how many years ago that was, but it was all the rage and everybody had those in their kitchen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
your kitchen was the bomb if you had.
Yes.
Stuff like that.
I remember my friend's mom's having them, and I'd be like, and I remember after like several times of seeing them, I'm like, oh, they don't eat these. I remember as a kid thinking like, that's so weird.
We had the big glass jars with dried pasta in it too.
Remember yes, that? Yes. You can eat the pasta. Like, so to me, I'm like, do the glass jars with the pasta, but like use that, you know, that's like, or yeah. You're right. If you eat rice all the time, you know, put it in there. Like, I think the things that you use most often should be out and accessible to you. Right. So it's easy. It makes your life easier. You don't have to go in the cabinet and get it out and pull all these, like it's right there. But you can create an aesthetically pleasing, like you put all your sugars in a nice little jar, you know, whatever, right. Things like that. But make it things that you use and that are easily accessible to you. Like, for example, I really love incense. I don't burn a lot of candles, but I'm a big incense gal. And I bought this cylinder pasta jars off Amazon, and I keep all my different incense in there that I use all the time. So like I can have them out on a bookshelf or something. Like they're usually displayed, but it's because I can just grab them and I label them on the top so I know what they are. And like so it can be part of my decor. I don't have to have a drawer of
Right.
random incense.
Right.
But I use it all the time.
Well,
That's a great idea.
this is really fun and informative. Catherine, tell everyone how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, of course. So obviously you can get in touch with me or find more information about me on my website, which is homesliceliving.com, and I can put that in the chat too. Homesliceliving.com. Homeslice Living is my company, so you can find all kinds of resources and things there. I did just switch my website over, and I've got it all together, but I've been tweaking it quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. I'm going to continue to do that, but there are resources, there are guides on, digital guides for like the home energy map and things like that. I do have the Play With Your Shui workbook that is coming out here in the next month or two. I keep thinking I'm going to be done with it, and then I get another idea and I add to it, and so it's just becoming bigger and better, but it'll be out within the next month or two. I don't have this posted on my site yet, and I don't have an official link for it, and probably until like the next couple of days, but I'll go ahead and mention it anyway. For those of you that are familiar with the company Daily Ohm, I actually just did a course with them, all about how you can unleash unhealthy emotions with feng shui and in your home. So that will be live on their site within the next week or so. And then you can find me on Instagram, at fengshui.kate. And then I would say I'm most active for those of you that are on TikTok. That is where I am most active, and put out the most content. If you want to keep in touch with me on a slightly more personal level and get kind of feng shui tips and little insights on just lifestyle and life, whether it's on my website or in any of my social media bios, there's a link to sign up for my free weekly newsletter. I don't spam you. It's basically I email you once a week. So yeah, those are some channels you can find me on. I hope that wasn't
Yeah, no, lots of great stuff on your website. I checked out your website, lots of great stuff there. So for those that are listening, whether you're listening now or to the replay, tap in to homesliceliving.com and see all the great things that Kate had to offer. So this has been great. I need to learn more. So I'm glad that you were on today. Thank you so much for agreeing to be our guest. I loved every minute of it. And as usual, I will send you a copy of the recording and we will give you a free spot in our speakers cabinet so that if other folks are looking for a speaker, they will find you there.
Wonderful. Thank you both so much. It was so nice to connect with you.
You too. Thanks for being on with us.
Yes, thank you. And we will see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.